put the sword down, please, miss? The voice came from somewhere behind her, but it sounded human and worried. Elves never sounded worried. Who are you? She said, without turning round. The monster in front of her gave her a big yellow-toothed grin. I'm Ponder Stibbons, a wizard, and he's a wizard too.
He's got no clothes on.
I could get him to have a bath if you like, said Ponder, slightly hysterically. He always puts on an old green dressing gown when he's had a bath.
Magrat relaxed a bit. No one who sounded like that could be much of a threat, except to themselves.
Whose side are you on, Mr. Wizard?
How many are there?
Ook? When I get off this horse, said Magrat, it'll bolt. So can you ask your friend to let go of the bridle? He'll be hurt.
Ook? Probably not.
Magrat slid off. The horse, relieved of the presence of iron, bolted for about 2 yards.
Ook!
The horse was struggling to get back on its feet. Magrat blinked.
He's just a bit annoyed at the moment, said Ponder. One of the elves shot him with an arrow.
But they do that to control people.
He's not a person.
Ook!
Genetically, I mean.
Magrat had met wizards before. Occasionally one visited Lancre, although they didn't stay very long. There was something about the presence of Granny Weatherwax that made them move on. They didn't look like Ponder Stibbons. He'd lost most of his robe, and of his hat only the brim remained. Most of his face was covered in mud, and there was a multicoloured bruise over one eye.
Did they do that to you?
Well, the mud and the torn clothes is just from, you know, the forest, and we've run into...
Ooh!
Over elves a few times, but this is when the librarian hit me.
Ook!
Thank goodness, Ponder added. Knocked me cold. Otherwise I'd be like the others.
A foreboding of a conversation to come swept over Magrat.
What others? She snapped.
Are you alone?
What others?
Have you any idea what's been happening?
Magrat thought about the castle and the town.
I might be able to hazard a guess, she said.
Ponder shook his head.
It's worse than that, he said.
What others? Said Magrat.
I think there's definitely been a cross-continuum breakthrough, and I'm sure there's a difference in energy levels.
But what others? Magrat insisted. Ponder Stibbons glanced nervously at the surrounding forest.
Let's get off the path. There's a lot more elves back there.
Ponder disappeared into the undergrowth. Magrat followed him and found a second wizard propped against a tree like a ladder. He had a huge smile creasing his face.
The bursar, said Ponder. I think we may have overdone the dried frog pills a bit.
He raised his voice.
How are you doing, sir?
I'll have a little of the roast weasel, if you would be so good,
said the bursar, beaming happily at nothing. Why has he gone so stiff? Said Magrat.
We think it's some kind of side effect, said Ponder.
Can't you do anything about it?
What, and have nothing to cross streams on?
Call again tomorrow, Baker, and we'll have a crusty one, said the bursar.
Besides, he seems quite happy, said Ponder. Are you a warrior, miss?
What? Said Magrat.
Well, I mean, the armour and everything.
Magrat looked down. She was still holding the sword. The helmet kept falling over her eyes, but she'd padded it a bit with a scrap of wedding dress.
Yes, that's right. That's what I am, she said. Absolutely, yes.
Here for the wedding, I expect. Like us.
That's right. Definitely here for the wedding. That's true.
She changed her grip on the sword.
Now, tell me what happened, she said, paying particular attention to what happened to the others.
Well...
Ponder absent-mindedly picked up a corner of his torn robe and began to screw it up in his fingers.
We all went to see this entertainment, you see. A play, you know. Acting. And it was very funny. There were all these yokels in their big boots and everything, straw wigs and everything, clumping around pretending to be lords and ladies and everything, and getting it all wrong. It was very funny. The bursar laughed at them a lot. Mind you, he's been laughing at trees and rocks too. But everyone was having fun. And then... And then...
I want to know everything, said Magrat.
Well, then there was this bit I can't really remember. It was something to do with the acting, I think. I mean, suddenly it all seemed real. Do you know what I mean?
No,
There was this chap with a red nose and bandy legs, and he was playing the Queen of the Fairies or something, and suddenly he was still him, but everything felt... everything around me just vanished. There were just the actors, and there was this hill. I mean, they must have been good, because I really believed... I think at some point I remember someone asking us to clap our hands, and everyone was looking very strange, and there was this singing, and it was wonderful, and... And...
Ooh.
Oh, and then the librarian hit me,
said Ponder simply. Why?
Best if he tells it in his own words, said Ponder.
Ooh, 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 ee, ooh, 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 ooh. Cough, Julia, over the bender, said the bursar.
I didn't understand what the librarian said, said Magrat.
We were all present at an interdimensional rip, said Ponder, caused by belief. The play was the last little thing that opened it up. There must have been a very delicate area of instability very close. It's hard to describe, but if you had a rubber sheet and some lead weights, I could demonstrate.
You're trying to tell me those things exist because people believe in them?
Oh, no, no. I imagine they exist anyway. They're here because people believe in them here.
Ooh.
He ran off with us. They shot an arrow at him.
Eek.
But it just made him itch.
Eek.
Normally, he's as gentle as a lamb. Really, he is.
Eek.
But he can't abide elves. They smell wrong to him.
The librarian flared his nostrils. Magrat didn't know much about jungles, but she thought about apes in the trees smelling the rank of the tiger. Apes never admired the sleek of the fur and the burn of the eye, because they were too well aware of the teeth of the mouth.
Yes, she said, I expect they would. Dwarfs and trolls hate them too, but I think they don't hate them as much as I do.
You can't fight them all, said Ponder. They're swarming like bees up there. There's flying ones too. The librarian says they made people get fallen trees and things and push those, you know, those stones down. There were some stones on the hill. They attacked them. Don't know why.
Did you see any witches at the entertainment? Said Magrat.
Witches,
muttered Ponder. You couldn't have missed them, said Magrat. There'd be a thin one glaring at everything and a small fat one cracking nuts and laughing a lot. And they'd be talking to each other very loudly. And they'd both have tall, pointy hats.
Can't say I noticed them, said Ponder.
Then they couldn't have been there, said Magrat. Being noticed is what being a witch is all about. She was about to add that she'd never been good at it, but didn't. Instead, she said, I'm going on up there.
You'll need an army, miss. I mean, you'd have been in trouble just now if the librarian hadn't been up in the trees.
But I haven't got an army, so I'm going to have to try by myself, aren't I? This time, Magrat managed to spur the horse into a gallop. Ponder watched her go.
You know... Folk songs have got a lot to answer for, he said to the night air.
Ooh, ooh, ooh.
She's going to get utterly killed.
Ooh. Hello, Mr. Flowerpot. 2 pints of eels, if you'd be so good.
Of course, it could be her destiny, or one of those sort of things.
Ooh. Millennium hand and shrimp.
Ponder Stibbons looked embarrassed.
Anyone want to follow her?
Ooh! Whoops! There he goes with his big clock.
Was that a yes?
Ooh!
Not yours, his.
Flobbly wobbly, here comes our jelly.
I think that probably counts as a yes, said Ponder reluctantly.
Ooh! I've got a lovely new vest.
But look, said Ponder, the graveyards are full of people who rushed in bravely but unwisely.
Ooh! What did he say?
Said the bursar, passing briefly through reality on his way somewhere else.
I think he said, sooner or later the graveyards are full of everybody, said Ponder. Oh, blast. Come on.
Yes, indeedy, said the bursar. Hands up the mittens, Mr. Bosun.
Oh, shut up.
Magrat dismounted and let the horse go. She knew she was near the dancers now. Coloured light flickered in the sky. She wished she could go home. The air was colder here, far too cold for a midsummer night. As she plodded onward, flakes of snow swirled in the breeze and turned to rain.
Ridcully materialised inside the castle, and then clung onto a pillar for support until he got his breath back. Transmigration always made blue spots appear in front of his eyes. No one noticed him. The castle was in turmoil. Not everyone had run home. Armies had marched across Lankra many times over the last few thousand years, and the recollection of the castle's thick, safe walls had been practically engraved in folk memory. Run to the castle! And now it held most of the little country's population. Ridcully blinked. People were milling around and being harangued by a small young man in loose-fitting chainmail and one arm in a sling, who seemed to be the only person with any grip on things. When he was certain he could walk straight, Ridcully headed towards him.
What's going on, young...
he began and then stopped. Sean Ogg looked around.
The scheming minx, said Ridcully to the air in general. Oh, go back and get it then, she said, and I fell right for it. Even if I could cut the mustard again, I don't know where we were.
Sir,
said Sean. Ridcully shook himself. What's happening, he said.
I don't know, said Sean, who was almost in tears. I think we're being attacked by elves. Nothing anyone's telling me is making any sense. Somehow they arrived during the entertainment or something.
Ridcully looked around at the frightened, bewildered people.
And Miss Magrat's gone out to fight them. Alone.
Ridcully looked perplexed.
Who's Miss Magrat?
She's going to be queen. The bride. You know, Magrat Garlic.
Ridcully's mind could digest one fact at a time.
What's she gone out for?
They captured the king.
Did you know they've got Esme Weatherwax as well?
What, Granny Weatherwax?
I came back to rescue her, said Ridcully, and then realised this sounded either nonsense or cowardly. Sean was too upset to notice.
I just hope they're not collecting witches, he said. They'll need our mum to get the complete set.
They ain't got me, then, said Nanny Ogg behind him.
Mum, how'd you get in?
Broomstick. You'd better get some people with bows up on the roof. I came down that way, so can others.
What are we going to do, Mum?
There's bands of elves all over the place, said Nanny, and there's a big glow over the dancers.
We must attack them, shouted Casanunda. Give them a taste of cold steel.
Good man, that dwarf, said Ridcully. That's right. I'll get my crossbow. There's too many of them, said Nanny flatly.
Granny and Miss Magrat are out there, Mum, said Sean. Miss Magrat came over all strange and put on armour and went out to fight all of them.
But the hills are crawling with elves, said Nanny. It's a double helping of elves with extra devils. Certain death.
It's certain death anyway, said Ridcully. That's the thing about death. Certainty.
We'd have no chance at all, said Nanny.
Actually, we'd have one chance, said Ridcully. I don't understand all this stuff, but from what young Stibbons says, it means that everything has to happen somewhere, do you see? So that means it could happen here, even if it's a million to one chance, ma'am.
That's all very well, said Nanny, but what you're saying is, for every Mr. Ridcully that survives tonight's work, 999,999 are going to get killed.
"Yes, but I'm not bothered about those other buggers," said Ridcully. "They can look after themselves. Serve 'em right for not inviting me to their weddings."
"What?"
"Nothing." Sean was hopping from one foot to the other.
"We ought to be fighting 'em, Mum."
"Look at everyone," said Nanny. "They're dog-tired and wet and confused. That's not an army."
"Mum, Mum, Mum!"
"What?"
"I'll psych 'em up, Mum. That's what you have to do before troops go into battle, Mum. I read about that in books. You can take a rabble of thingy and make the right kind of speech and psych them up and turn them into a terrible fighting force, Mum.
They look terrible anyway.
I mean, terrible like fierce, Mum.
Nanny Ogg looked at the 100 or so Lankra subjects. The thought of them managing to fight anyone at all took some getting used to.
"You've been studying this, Sean?" she inquired.
"I've got 5 years' worth of bows and ammo, Mum," said Sean reproachfully.
"Well, give it a try, then, if you think it'll work."
Trembling with excitement, Sean climbed onto a table, drew his sword with his good hand, and banged it on planks until people were silent. He made a speech. He pointed out that their king had been captured and their prospective queen had gone out to save him. He pointed out their responsibility as loyal subjects. He pointed out that other people, currently not here but at home hiding under the bed, would, after the glorious victory, wish they'd been there too instead of under the aforesaid bed, which they were hiding under. You know, the bed he'd just mentioned. In fact, it was better that there were so few here to face the enemy, because that meant that there would be a higher percentage of honour per surviving head. He used the word glory 3 times. He said that in times to come, people would look back on this day, whatever the date was, and proudly show their scars, at least those who'd survived would show their scars, and be very proud, and probably have drinks bought for them. He advised people to imitate the action of the Lancre reciprocating fox, and stiffen some sinews while leaving them flexible enough so they could move their arms and legs. In fact, probably it'd be better to relax them a bit now and stiffen them properly when the time came. He suggested that Lancre expected everyone to do their duty. And, please. The silence that followed was broken by Nanny Ogg, who said, "They're probably considering it a bit, Sean. Why don't you take Mr. Wizardeer up to his room and help him with his crossbow?" She nodded meaningfully in the direction of the stairs. Sean wavered, but not for long. He'd seen the glint in his mother's eyes. When he'd gone, Nanny climbed up on the same table. "Well," she said, "it's like this. If you go out there, you may have to face elves. But if you stops here, you definitely have to face me. Now, elves is worse than me, I'll admit, but I'm persistent." Weaver put up a tentative hand.
"Please, Mrs. Ogg."
"Yes, Weaver."
"What exactly is the action of the reciprocating fox?"
Nanny scratched her ear.
"As I recall," she said, "its back legs go like this, but its front legs go like this."
"No, no, no," said Quorney, the storekeeper. It's tail that goes like that. Its legs go like this."
"That's not reciprocating, that's just oscillating," said someone. "You're thinking of the ring-tailed ocelot."
Nanny nodded.
"That's settled then," she said.
"Hold on, I'm not sure."
"Yes, Mr. Quorney?"
"Oh, well."
"Good, good," said Nanny, as Sean reappeared. "They was just saying, our Sean, how they were swayed by your speech. Really psyched up.
Kya!"
"They're ready to follow you into the jaws of hell itself, I expect," said Nanny. Someone put up their hand.
"Are you coming too, Mrs. Ogg?"
I'll just stroll along behind," said Nanny.
"Oh, well, maybe as far as the jaws of hell, then." "Amazing," said Casanunda to Nanny,
as the crowd filed reluctantly towards the armoury.
"You just got to know how to deal with people. They'll follow where an Ogg leads."
"Not exactly," said Nanny. "But if they know what's good for 'em, they'll go where an Ogg follows." Magrat stepped out from under the trees, and the moorland lay ahead of her. A whirlpool of cloud swirled over the dancers, or at least over the place where the dancers had been. She could make out one or two stones by the flickering light, lying on their side or rolled down the slope of the hill. The hill itself glowed. Something was wrong with the landscape. It curved where it shouldn't curve. Distances weren't right. Magrat remembered a woodcut shoved in as a place marker in one of her old books. It showed the face of an old crone, but if you stared at it, you saw it was also the head of a young woman. A nose became a neck, an eyebrow became a necklace. The images seesawed back and forth, and like everyone else, she'd squinted herself silly trying to see them both at the same time. The landscape was doing pretty much the same thing. What was a hill was also, at the same time, a vast snowbound panorama. Lancre and the land of the elves were trying to occupy the same space. The intrusive country wasn't having it all its own way. Lancre was fighting back. There was a circle of tents just on the cusp of the warring landscapes, like a beachhead on an alien shore. They were brightly coloured. Everything about the elves was beautiful, until the image tilted and you saw it from the other side. Something was happening. Several elves were on horseback, and more horses were being led between the tents. It looked as though they were breaking camp. The queen sat on a makeshift throne in her tent. She sat with her elbow resting on one arm of the throne and her fingers curling pensively around her mouth. There were other elves seated in a semicircle, except that seated was a barely satisfactory word. They lounged. Elves could make themselves at home on a wire.
And here there was more lace and velvet and fewer feathers. Although it was hard to know if it meant that these were aristocrats, elves seemed to wear whatever they felt like wearing, confident of looking absolutely stunning. The monks of Kool, whose tiny and exclusive monastery is hidden in a really cool and laid-back valley in the lower Ramtops, have a passing-out test for a novice. He is taken into a room full of all types of clothing and asked, "Yo, my son, which of these is the most stylish thing to wear?" And the correct answer is, "Hey, whatever I select." Cool, but not necessarily up to date. Every one of them watched the Queen and was a mirror of her moods. When she smiled, they smiled. When she said something she thought was amusing, they laughed. Currently, the object of her attention was Granny Weatherwax.
"What is happening, old woman?" she said. "It ain't easy, is it?" said Granny. "Thought it would be easy, didn't you? You've done some magic, haven't you? Something is fighting us." "No magic," said Granny. "No magic at all. It's just that you've been away too long. Things change. The land belongs to humans now." "That can't be the case," said the Queen. "Humans take, they plough with iron, they ravage the land." "Some do, I'll grant you that. Others put back more than they take. They put back love. They've got soil in their bones. They tell the land what it is. That's what humans are for. Without humans, Lankra'd just be a bit of ground with green bits on it. They wouldn't even know their trees. We're all down here together, madam. Us and the land. It's not just land anymore, it's a country. It's like a horse that's been broken and shod, or a dog that's been tamed. Every time people put a plough in the soil or planted a seed, they took the land further away from you," said Granny. "Things change."
Verence sat beside the Queen. His pupils were tiny pinpoints. He smiled faintly, permanently, in a way very reminiscent of the bursar.
"Ah, but when we are married," said the Queen, "the land must accept me, by your own rules. I know how it works. There's more to being a king than wearing a crown. The king and the land are one, the king and the queen are one. And I shall be queen."
She smiled at Granny. There was an elf on either side of her, and, Granny knew, at least one behind her. Elves were not given to introspection. If she moved without permission, she'd die.
"What you shall be is something I have yet to decide," said the Queen.
She held up an exquisitely thin hand and curled the thumb and forefinger into a ring, which she held up to her eye.
"And now someone comes," she said, "with armour that doesn't fit, and a sword she cannot use, and an axe she can hardly even lift. Because it is so romantic, is it not? What is her name?" "Magrat Garlic," said Granny. "She is a mighty enchantress, is she?" "She's good with herbs."
The Queen laughed.
"I could kill her from here." "Yes," said Granny, "but that wouldn't be much fun, would it? Humiliation is the key."
The Queen nodded.
"You know, you think very much like an elf." "I think it will soon be dawn," said Granny. "A fine day. Clear light." "Not soon enough."
The Queen stood up. She glanced at King Verence for a moment and changed. Her dress went from red to silver, catching the torchlight like glittering fish scales. Her hair unravelled and reshaped itself, became corn blonde, and a subtle ripple of alterations flowed across her face before she said,
"What do you think?"
She looked like Magrat, or at least like Magrat wished she looked, and maybe as Verence always thought of her. Granny nodded. As one expert to another, she recognised accomplished nastiness when she saw it.
"Are you going to face her like that?" she said. "Certainly. Eventually. At the finish. But don't feel sorry for her. She's only going to die. Would you like me to show you what you might have been?" "No. I could do it easily. There are other times than this. I could show you Grandmother Weatherwax." "No. It must be terrible knowing that you have no friends, that no one will care when you die, that you never touched a heart." "Yes. And I'm sure you think about it. In those long evenings when there's no company but the ticking of the clock and the coldness of the room, and you open the box and look at
The Queen waved a hand vaguely as Granny tried to break free.
"Don't kill her," she said. "She is much more fun alive."
Magrat stuck the sword in the mud and hefted the battle axe. Woods pressed in on either side. The elves would have to come this way. There looked like hundreds of them, and there was only one Magrat Garlic. She knew there were such a thing as heroic odds. Songs and ballads and stories and poems were full of stories about one person single-handedly taking on and defeating a vast number of enemies. Only now it was dawning on her that the trouble was that they were songs and ballads and stories and poems because they dealt with things that were, not to put too fine a point on it, untrue. She couldn't, now she'd time to think about it, ever remember an example from history. In the woods to one side of her, an elf raised its bow and took careful aim. A twig snapped behind it. It turned. The bursar beamed.
"Whoopsie-daisy, old trouser, my bean's all runny."
The elf swung the bow. A pair of prehensile feet dropped out of the greenery, gripped it by the shoulders and pulled it upwards sharply. There was a crack as its head hit the underside of the branch.
"Ooh! Move right along!"
On the other side of the path, another elf took aim, and then its world flowed away from it. This is the inside of the mind of an elf. Here are the normal five senses, but they are all subordinate to the sixth sense. There is no formal word for it on the Discworld because the force is so weak that it is only ever encountered by observant blacksmiths, who call it the love of iron. Navigators might have discovered it, were it not that the disc's standing magical field is much more reliable. But bees sense it, because bees sense everything. Pigeons navigate by it, and everywhere in the multiverse elves use it to know exactly where they are. It must be hard for humans, forever floundering through inconvenient geography. Humans are always slightly lost. It's a basic characteristic. It explains a lot about them. Elves are never lost at all. It's a basic characteristic. It explains a lot about them. Elves have absolute position. The flow of the silvery force dimly outlines the landscape. Creatures generate small amounts of it themselves and become perceptible in the flux. Their muscles crackle with it, their minds buzz with it. For those who learn how, even thoughts can be read by the tiny local changes in the flow. For an elf, the world is something to reach out and take. Except for the terrible metal that drinks the force and deforms the flux universe like a heavy weight on a rubber sheet, and blinds them and deafens them, and leaves them rudderless and more alone than most humans could ever be. The elf toppled forward. Ponder Stibbons lowered the sword. Almost everyone else would not have thought much about it, but Ponder's wretched fate was to look for patterns in an uncaring world.
"But I hardly touched him," he said, to no one except himself.
"And I kissed her in the shrubbery where the nightingales sing it, you bastards! 2, 3.
They didn't know where they were. They didn't know where they'd been. They were not fully certain who they were. But the Lancre Morris men had reached some sort of state now where it was easier to go on than stop. Singing attracted elves, but singing also fascinated them. The dancers whirled and hopped, gyrated and skipped along the paths. They pranced through isolated hamlets where elves left whoever they were torturing to draw closer in the light of the burning buildings.
"With a whack foddler diddle do, singer ruler to Riley."
6 sticks did their work right on the beat.
"Where are we going, Jason?"
"I reckon we've gone down Slippery Hollow and are circling back towards the town," said Jason, hopping past Baker. "Keep going, Carter."
"The rain's got in the keys, Jason."
"Don't matter. They don't know the difference. It's good enough for folk music."
"I think I brought my stick on that last one, Jason."
"Just keep dancing, Tinker. Now, lads, how about gathering peas cods? We might as well get some practice in since we're here."
"There's some people up ahead," said Taylor as he skipped past. "I can see torches in that."
"Human, 2, 3, or more elves?"
"I dunno."
Jason spun and danced back.
"Is that you, our Jason?"
Jason cackled as the voice echoed among the dripping trees.
"It's our man, and our Sean, and lots of people. We've made it, lads."
"Jason," said Carter.
"Yes?"
"I ain't sure I can stop."
The Queen examined her face in a mirror attached to the tent pole.
"Why," said Granny, "what is it you see?"
"Whatever I want to see," said the Queen. "You know that.
And now, let us ride to the castle, tie her hands together, but leave her legs free.
It rained again, gently, although round the stones it turned to sleet. The water dripped off Magrat's hair and temporarily unravelled the tangles. Mist coiled out from among the trees where summer and winter fought. Magrat watched the elven court mount up. She made out the figure of Verence moving like a puppet, and Granny Weatherwax tied behind the Queen's horse by a long length of rope. The horses splashed through the mud. They had silver bells on their harnesses, dozens of them. The elves in the castle, the night of ghosts and shadows, all of this was just a hard knot in her memory, but the jingling of the bells was like a nail file rubbed across her teeth. The Queen halted the procession a few yards away.
"Ah, the brave girl," she said. "Come to save her fiancé, all alone? How sweet! Someone kill her!"
An elf spurred its horse forward and raised its sword. Magrat gripped the battle-axe. Somewhere behind her a bowstring slammed against wood. The elf jerked. So did one behind it. The arrow kept going, curving a little as it passed over one of the fallen dancers. Then Sean Ogg's ragbag army charged out from under the trees, except for Ridcully, who was feverishly trying to rewind his crossbow. The Queen did not look surprised.
"And there's only about 100 of them," she said. "What do you think, Esme Weatherwax? A valiant last stand. It's so beautiful, isn't it? I love the way humans think. They think like songs."
"You get down off that horse," Magrat shouted. The Queen smiled at her.
Sean felt it. Ridcully felt it. Ponder felt it. The glamour swept over them. Elves feared iron, but they didn't need to go near it. You couldn't fight elves because you were so much more worthless than them. It was right that you should be so worthless, and they were so beautiful and you weren't. You were always the one metaphorically picked last for any team, even after the fat kid with one permanently blocked runny nostril. You were always the one who wasn't told the rules until you'd lost, and then wasn't told the new rules. You were the one who always knew that everything interesting was happening to other people. All those hot, self-consuming feelings were rolled together. You couldn't fight an elf. Someone as useless as you, as stolid as you, as human as you, could never win. The universe wasn't built like that.